business come to order. Today we'll have an informational presentation from Chalkboard Project with an update. So, Sue, Dan, if you'd like to come forward.
Madam Chair, thank you for inviting us back today. My name is Sue Hildick, and I'm president of Foundations for a Better Oregon and the Chalkboard Project, and I'm very pleased that Adam Davis could be back today, too, who, as you know, is one of our partners in this effort, particularly on the public opinion work that we've been doing. We are here to give you a progress report and to hopefully maybe clear up confusion that you may have seen in the media in the last 10 days about what we are doing and when are we announcing our findings. And let me maybe start with that to help give some clarity there. Our civic engagement process is underway right now and will be until the end of May. And it's our intent that when it is complete, we will be offering up our findings at that time. So it'll be end of May, early June, but certainly before the end of the school year. That's our plan. We will have initiatives in that package that will be targeted towards the legislature, the education community, and the foundations themselves. So really threefold in what we intend to bring forward. We had hoped that we could preview some of that last week. And what we found was we weren't quite ready, one, and secondly, we didn't want to cut off the public engagement process. We thought that it might be confusing for Oregonians to see us issue some initial findings and then hear that the process was still ongoing. So that's why we've decided to wait. So what we wanted to do today is share with you some of what we've been learning along the way. And Adam's going to do that in depth, but maybe I could just set the scene by saying that we have been in 20 communities in Oregon over the last 45 days with what we call citizen feedback sessions. And I think you all have seen our materials. We have a workbook, if you will, that we've been asking people to walk through with us. And really, we're doing that in small groups, trying to have a really quality dialogue where we can and hear from Oregonians what are their priorities, what ideas resonate with them, which ones don't. And we've heard both. But it's been an excellent process, and I think one in which we feel like we're getting a very good basic starting point laid. We're not trying to move public opinion in this process. We're trying to collect it. We're trying to ask the questions that we need to in order to know what kind of information people need to make good decisions about the schools. In addition to those town meetings, which will continue to go on, we're doing a lot of grassroots activity. We're trying to take the materials into Rotary clubs and church groups and book clubs and really anywhere where someone is willing to gather their neighbors, their friends, their colleagues, we will go with a volunteer and try to lead a conversation around these issues. And we think that's growing over time. We've been in 22 counties now. We intend to be in all 36, and it's very important to us that that process is as robust as it can be before the end of May. So a large focus on our part there. But we are starting to see some areas of common ground. We're also starting to see the areas where a lot of work will need to be done to find common ground. And what we thought we might do today is have Adam share a bit of those learnings with you, and then we're happy to delve deeper if you'd like to.
Thank you, Sue. Members of the committee, it's great to see you again. I think the last time we met was your first session of this legislative session, and I remember the jar and watching that. What are we doing there? That's incredible.
Yeah.
Very
actually,
good.
It's been robbed by $10, too, so it should be. It will be $10 richer when someone who took it replaces it.
And I think Ozzie Rose contributed through me $3 to that at that meeting, too. So we're doing well. We're doing well. It's a pleasure to be here again. I just wanted to review with you what the goals for... oh, there we go, another dollar. Wanted to review with you very quickly what the goals for this particular research are and to kind of distinguish what we're doing now from what we reported to you initially. What we shared with you initially were the findings from the values and beliefs study about publication that was about education that was done, public education K through 12 in Oregon. Real in-depth study, 1,800 Oregonians, and we spent some time the committee going over those results. Now we're moving into what we're terming the initiatives research. 46 initiatives are on the table, and we are engaging through the civic engagement process Oregonians. We want Oregonians to look at them, get to understand them, talk about them, and we want to find out how Oregonians feel. So the specific goals for this research are, number one, we want to find out how a true cross-section of Oregonians are feeling about them. And I think we've made it real clear all along that we're working hard to reach out to the stakeholder groups, the special interest groups, to find out how they feel about these initiatives. But it's very important, the chalkboard, to really hear from a cross-section of Oregonians, to really hear from the bell on that bell-shaped curve, and just not the ends. And that's a real challenge, quite honestly, these days, the whole public involvement process. Number two, the second goal, besides reaching out to a representative cross-section of Oregonians, is to not only find out how they're feeling about things, but why they're feeling that way, to get at the underlying motivations. Why are Oregonians feeling this way about this particular initiative? The third thing is to find out what information, what questions do they have about each of these initiatives? What information, if they were provided, would help them or make it easier for them to take a position for it or against it? That chalkboard just wants to find out what questions people have and find out how to better talk about these initiatives with Oregonians. And I think the fourth goal, quite honestly, is to give Oregonians an opportunity to volunteer other ideas. These are just 46 initiatives. They cut across these areas of parental involvement, funding stability, quality educators, accountability, reading, these kinds of issues. But what other ideas besides these 46 do Oregonians have in mind? So here's where we are. We're working hard, but we have some gaps right now. What the civic engagement process so far has resulted in are results that are skewed in a way. We're getting more older people than younger people. A real problem that the public involvement process is having these days is getting those 18 to 34-year-olds to participate in things. So we're a little heavy right now on the 45-plus. We're actually heavier on males than females right now, in terms of just getting their perspectives. Not surprisingly, more parents than non-parents. And also not surprisingly, we're very overrepresented in our public civic engagement process by educators. And that's not surprising, but it's something we want to keep an eye on. Because, again, we want to make this a good read and be able to come back to you and give you a representative cross-section of how Oregonians are feeling about things. I wanted to say, however, despite this balance that we're seeing, there are some things that are beginning to bubble to the surface, and I thought you would find that interesting. But what we're part of the reason that we're postponing things until May for another 2 months is to continue the civic engagement process and work real, real hard using every means we can think of, and some that we haven't even thought of yet, to bring these demographics into line with what we know are the demographics of the state of Oregon. And we had a great meeting, for example, with the editorial board of the Salem Statesman Journal yesterday, and they were very open and are going to really get the word out about doing such things as, for example, encouraging business leaders. And we're available to come to places of work, meet with groups of employees at the places where people work, during lunch hour, after work, possibly even during work. Intel Corporation, for example, is going to make it possible for us to meet with their employees. And so see where we're all of a sudden going to be able to start filling in that 18 to 34-year-old gap that we need to do and must do. But, again, what's bubbling to the surface? Real quickly, I think we shared this with you when we met the first time, but a big part of this education puzzle for average Oregonians is parental involvement. I mean, if you give a group of people a choice as to which of the five topics they want to talk about, it's parental involvement. They'll go there on you pretty quickly. And what we're finding, and I don't expect these things to change, is that initiatives, for example, like doing things more at the schools to facilitate better communications between teachers, administrators, and parents to improve parental involvement is something that Oregonians feel very, very strongly about. What does that mean when we talk to them then qualitatively? Such things as using perhaps the internet and being able to reach parents at home on the computer, taking better advantage of that, having teachers become more comfortable with it, let parents know that that option is available. It doesn't come without its problems, granted, but these are the kinds of systems that Oregonians want to see in place. People are extremely busy. There are a lot of demands on their time. It would be fantastic to be able to get emails from teachers with updates as to how students are doing. We would hear in focus groups about parents complaining that they never get that little note that was sent home with the child from the teacher. Well, this will take care of that. I mean, that's what parents were saying to us in our focus groups. Other things, a very specific initiative was actual, and this is where the foundations might be able to be very helpful, are classes. Parent education classes on how to better navigate the school environment. If I'm a parent, what can I do? What are my options? Who should I talk to? What's the best way to contact him or her? Those kinds of issues. Again, we don't expect those results to really change when we get more people involved in answering these questions. So, And we also hear that parents really feel that they should take more responsibility as well. And one thing that really comes to the surface is parents doing more to limit TV time and video game time. They see this as a two-way street, and a lot of stuff has to go on at home as well. But there are things that perhaps the foundations can do creatively to encourage more of this actually taking place at home. So I think my the message we have for you this afternoon is parental involvement is right up there as a key topic. Those are some of the specifics that people are feeling very strongly about. Under funding stability, very quickly, we asked people about a guaranteed annual reserve. We asked people about setting up a statewide system for the and for the local option. Among the people we've talked to so far, there's very strong support for a close look at both those things. I'd give the edge right now to the guaranteed annual reserve over the local option. But in both cases, you're enjoying clear majority support, either somewhat strongly or very strongly, for looking at both those means to provide more stability to funding. And that's the key. It's the stability issue that's really driving people. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A guaranteed annual reserve is not a term that we've generally been using here at the legislature. So could you kind of describe it or what people think that is? Is it for education only? Is it for the state? I don't know. What's it mean?
And let me read you the specific item that Oregonians are kind of grappling with right now. A guaranteed annual reserve should be established in the state general fund to make up the shortfall when schools don't have enough money to meet projected needs. So when we talk to people about it and you triangulate this with other initiatives and other results in this questionnaire, it's all about education. And they want some guarantees that this money is going to be used for education. The concern is about stability here. Under quality educators, what we see there are a couple themes, real interesting. The importance of mentoring, for example. A strong feeling that new teachers need mentoring. And there was some very strong support for this specific initiative. Let me read it to you. Require school districts hiring new teachers and principals to continuously provide peer mentoring during the first 3 years of service. The word incentives, the whole concept of having a system that might have more incentives built into it to encourage professional development, to encourage teachers to teach in certain schools, that concept seems to be really resonating with Oregonians. Reward teachers and principals with incentives for developing their skills and working in high-need schools and subject areas. The final thing I would say about quality educators is that we saw in the Values and Beliefs Study, I think we talked about this the last time we were here, about how strongly Oregonians feel about teachers. They enjoy a great deal of respect and strong support. But they're probably, in every focus group we had with parents and even students, there was always the story about that one bad teacher. And when you have an initiative that kind of addresses that, we see strong support. Let me read it to you. Improve processes or processes to review the job performance of teachers and principals and set clear expectations and consequences for those who are in need of improvement. And that is one of those initiatives of the 11 we tested, those three that I just shared with you, the ones that have really bubbled to the top. And again, I don't expect much of a change in support for those. Good readers, and I might hand it back to Sue here. It was real interesting what we found out on good readers and the value of tutoring. Mm-hmm.
A lot of support for making sure that Oregon children can read by the third grade. I think not a surprise, but maybe an affirmation. Three-fourths of those that we've talked to thus far have really identified that piece is important to them. We tested three ideas in that area. First, making sure we're assessing programs at elementary school levels and we are identifying successful programs and trying to bring everybody up to that level. Second, that we look at tutoring for students who are not reading at grade level by age three. We think there are lots of ways to do that, and the one we like the best so far is using community organizations like SMART to help deliver that kind of tutoring, which could be low cost or no cost to the school districts. And the third piece we tested there was lowering class sizes in grades K to, did we test K1 or K3?
K3.
And the first two, really, we've seen a great deal of support for. The third one is a little bit more divided, tends to be on the pro side, but not quite as strong as the first two. So we're taking a look at those, all three of those, and we think that that's an area where Oregonians really can come together around some of those initiatives.
I stand correct. It's K through K in first grade. And that's an interesting comment. I mean, people are sensitive to the fact that resources are limited, and they're willing to make trade-offs. We would talk to them, and we often we'd start off talking about K through three, but the sentiment out there is that this is critical. The earlier, the better. At least make it K one, and that's what we're testing in our initiatives. But just two other things, and then I'll quit here. One is this whole budget accountability area, and we have some specific initiatives related to that. But what we're learning in our groups, and we don't expect this to change, is that Oregonians are kind of baffled sometimes when they look at a lot of the information that comes out of education organizations, school districts. I'm talking specifically about budget information. It's not only Greek, it's Greek to them, and it just doesn't make sense. They don't understand it, and they get very frustrated. A clear message to Chalkboard is that something's got to be done. Something's got to be done to make this information more understandable to people. Something's got to be done, quite honestly, in the way it's presented graphically to people. Another theme in what we're seeing in the open-ended comments is give me some information to compare it to. You give me all these numbers, so what do they mean? How does my district stack up to the neighboring school district or a comparable school district demographically or socioeconomically? How does it stack up maybe to a private system model? How does it stack up to a national average? This information is important to people. They feel they're not getting it. If they were to get it, it would help them better understand the information, and then just the whole presentation issue is a big one. The only other thing I might mention is that, you know, we've learned very quickly that Oregonians are uncomfortable talking about any single initiative in isolation. They want to know the details. What do you mean by that? They also want to know what else might be happening at the same time you're going to be doing this particular initiative. So to have credibility with people, I think you've got to let them know that you understand that this is a big picture and that no one thing is going to do the job. And we get constantly pushed, and people are uncomfortable. We give them a scale, and a lot of people will be on that neutral point of the scale. We ask them why, and it's because they want to know what else you're planning on doing. How does this relate to accountability? How does this relate to parental involvement? So we've got to be able to talk in terms of interconnectedness of these initiatives. The only other thing we might add is, again, we're finding that the messenger is really important. Who it is that's proposing these initiatives is very important to Oregonians at this particular point in time. And we talked a little about this as a group last time we discussed messengers and who's the best person to engage Oregonians in this initial discussion, but then to possibly carry some of these things forward to actual implementation. And we can talk a little bit more about that if you care to. But again, we're seeing in our work a lot of respect and strong positive feelings for the nonprofit, the independent, the nonpartisan sector of Oregon at this particular point in time.
I might just add that Chalkboard's really proven to be as much about civic engagement as it has been about education. And we've been getting a real education in civic engagement and how difficult it is, which I'm sure you all know, too, from the roles that you play in your communities. Just this morning I saw an article about Hillsboro holding some budget meetings and being very disappointed in the attendance. I think 24 people over a series of meetings. And we had that same experience in Hillsboro. We saw some much higher numbers in other parts of the state, but we were scratching our heads about what's going on here and what can we do to make this more accessible. And this whole process has been very agile in trying to figure it out. And what I think we've landed on is, in some places, we've got to go to where people are working, to where they're gathering for church, for where they are pursuing some of their social activities. We've got to go there, and we've got to make it a lot easier to plug in. So that's a part two of why this is so important for us to continue to do through the end of May, is really to try to figure that out.
Questions, Ms. Hill, Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Concerning here, as I read this your presentation, the can read by the third grade. And if they went through kindergarten and first grade, they should be able to read by the first grade. why do it, what's the reason picked up the third grade? If they are not able to read by the first grade, chances are they are not able to read continually. The person, the student has a particular problem.
Right. Well, we would hope it would be identified in kindergarten, first grade, and that that's where the resources would be focused. This is based on the fact if a child can't read by the third grade level, their chances of successfully completing school are not good. So it's by the third grade.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions. I know we're under threat that if anybody asks questions, Shield is going to pay him off to keep quiet.
Oh, it's that weather outside, huh?
Madam Chair.
Oh, busted. I'm so
sorry. You guys lost your dollar. Are we still recording?
You're red.
He's a newlywed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to make one quick comment. And then I've got a kind of a dual question. But one, you just mentioned about plugging parents in and having to go to them, and that's the difficulty in schools trying to get them to plug into this parental involvement in the schools. I mean, that's a real problem and probably a real number one thing for school success. But Adam, one of the things you're talking about is taking this research question and spreading it out over time, and history is always a threat to validity in research in the field. So are you looking at change over time and what the external factors of history that are going to affect this is one. And then the second part, and it related to parental involvement. I mean, we're dealing in some of my schools, the child is the translator for the parents. So, I mean, we've got parents, and that's the Hispanic community, for example, is the fastest growing community. But I have a Southeast Asian, I have Russian families in my district, and the child is the one who speaks English. So they take the note home. They explain it to the mother, saying, "Yes, my teacher thinks you're beautiful." So could you kind of discuss the validity and also the changing demographics that schools are dealing with?
Absolutely. You won't mention that. I mean, that was amazing. Was it in Salem or Hillsborough?
Yeah. I might just to start this off, and then Adam can finish. We've made a significant effort to outreach to the Hispanic population. We translated all our materials, and we've been holding bilingual forums and had a real success a few weeks ago with 1,200 parents in Salem who came out to walk through the parental involvement section. They came out for a parent conference, but they did that section when they were together. And the passion and the angst that's coming out of that community is just overwhelming to us. First of all, I'm not sure there's been a process for them before where they can feel comfortable coming together and talking. And we're using leaders in the Hispanic community to be our translators, so that trust is there as they come in. Second of all, there is real pent-up frustration about the interaction of the education system with those families. And I don't really know how else to convey it. We heard it just in passionate pleas from parents that teachers listen to them, respect them, understand their culture as they're dealing with their child. I mean, I really think there's a whole other project to be done with that community, and I'm hoping we can do as much as we can through Chalkboard. But I think there are some really unique issues there that we need to learn more about.
Representative March, we're being very careful in terms making sure we're monitoring external events and the impact that they might have on the measurement of attitudes and, for that matter, behavior. But you're absolutely right. News headlines about the economy possibly improving does play itself out in terms of attitudinal change. So we're watching that like a hawk, and what we're doing periodically is some scientific random sampling that can be done very quickly so that we have a valid check on where we are, both in terms of making sure we have a representative cross-section of people, but boom, you get it at that particular point in time and you can compare it back to a baseline. So that's what we're up to.
Yeah. Thank you. And the cultural competency is a real issue.
It's a big issue.
Madam Chair?
Representative Barr.
I was raising my hand to them. You can tell it's Friday. A little distracted. Thank you, Madam Chair. Sue and Adam, I know that you were in my area and you gave a presentation, I believe, at Springfield High School. Is there any chance that you might be at a Eugene school?
We actually did do a Eugene school. I'm blanking on the location. Representative Farback can get that for you. We did do Eugene, and I think that there is a chance we will be back. We have just elongated our schedule with Sojourn, so they are going to do an additional 5 venues with us. So that'll be happening in March and April. I can't at the moment recall if Eugene's on that list, but I'll check it for you.
What was the name?
Sojourn Theater. We've been partnering with them.
Yeah.
Witness Our Schools is their production. And we decided to stay with that format in the extension of our schedule because they're drawing other than the usual suspects out to see the play. And we're real pleased with that. But I will get back to you about Eugene.
That would be great. Thank you. I've had a number of parents ask me.
Have you?
Specifically, if there's going to be a presentation locally.
Great.
Representative Dalton.
I'd like to know when you're going to Madras and John Day. Just today on the phone, I was talking about Chalkboard and John Day. If you let us know when you're going, they'll get the people out.
Wonderful. Anything you guys can do would be helpful. If there are any business leaders you think we need to get a hold of, that would be great. Ask people to visit the website where people have an opportunity at the website to complete the regional feedback booklet online. So that option is available to people as well. But thank you. That's great.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to suggest that if you are going to be doing any of these in our districts, that if you be sure to give us a heads up that they're going to happen, then we can spread the word as well.
Great.
Through the emails that are available on our websites.
Super.
Maybe I might have one more question.
Representative Lynn, please.
Thank you. This may not be your direct concern, but as a policymaker, we have a big concern not only now but in the future, such as a changing of demographics of our state. The population in 50 years, our state will be also the minority becomes the majority. And then we heard also that the more services demanded, but the less revenues coming in for funding education. This is a big problem in the future that we need to find out. You looking at those issues also. When we talk about the stable funding, that is the one of the major issues we need to look at. Continue to dwindling funding, at the same time more demand for the minority, especially Latino families coming and with that lot of numbers, and on top of that demanding more English as a second language, and so we need to be prepared for that, but we don't have any clear answer for that. I'm wondering, I know this is a policy issue, but can you respond to that?
Well, it's encouraging so far. You know, when I look at the demographics of the people who have participated in our civic engagement so far, you know, one area that we're right on is ethnicity, Representative Limit, which is very encouraging. We'll have to watch our gender and our parent, non-parent within ethnic groups, but I'm very happy to report to you that we're getting good representation at this stage from different ethnic groups across the state. So we're finding out, Representative March, as well, what's on the minds of these people, the difficulties they're experiencing, and we're watching that particular demographic very, very carefully. And I know Chalkboard is very interested in considering those issues in its planning and policy making.
One follow-up comment.
Follow-up.
And most of the first-generation minorities, they are not likely to participate in the school PTA meetings since they don't understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's very challenging. And I encourage many minority groups, even though they couldn't understand, it is important for them to attend at least find out, try to find out what's going on.
This is something we experience in other arenas as well, and what we try to do often is to reach out to people that might be active in the social services, in the health arena, who have access to these communities, who speak the language, who know the culture, and get them to help us understand a little bit more about what's going on in terms of values and beliefs on the part of these people. It's kind of like that one step removed, but these people can often be just great informants as to what's going on out there. And we've had some good experience with some of the Latino groups across the state, and we're working all the time to reach out to other groups as well.
A couple questions, and I don't see it listed as any of your five topics of consideration, so I'll just ask my question and tell me where it funnels in. From the work that you've done with those that have participated thus far, have you gained a sense of people's concern in or priority of the funding debate as opposed and distinguished from the process debate or best practice or the systemic issue?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, yes, we have. It's been interesting. Our materials talk really about stable funding versus adequacy. And in some of our forums, most I think in the metro areas, the adequacy question's been raised, of course, and we've talked about it outside of the materials a little bit. And I think that we have seen in the public meetings the divide that we saw in the survey, which we told you about last time we were here. The state is divided on that question. And those that fall in the camp of not being sure if schools are spending funds efficiently really, I think, are saying they don't know. And they're not sure how they would know based on the information that comes to them. And that's why we've sort of taken on the role of trying to bring out into the sunshine, if you will, how school budgets work. And one whole section of our citizen guide is about budget accountability. And we take a school district budget and we develop it into a series of graphs and charts that show what's the federal share, the local share, the state share, and what does it cost to educate different kinds of students. And then within those lines, what's instruction versus supplies versus capital, if you will, really trying to drill down there. And I think that's the only way that we're really going to be able to have people make good decisions about that issue of funding, because they're really asking for more information.
They're asking for more information, and they often, even the people who at this particular point in time would say that they support additional revenue for education, there's usually a caveat. There's a qualifier that quickly comes with it. And if there isn't, it would only take a few minutes talking with their fellow Oregonians around a table to make them realize that there's some questions that they need answered as well. And it's, again, this interconnectedness of any of these issues for people, any of these initiatives, and people really want to hear what's going on particularly on the budget accountability front, as well as the parental involvement front, before you start talking to them about more money for education. Quite candidly, that's what we're seeing right now.
If I might add to that, there's been a fair amount of cynicism, of course, that we've picked up across the state, and even about Chalkboard, with folks saying to us, well, you've got to be about more money. And, you know, we are very clear and have been from the beginning that our platform of investigation is quality, accountability, and finance. But a lot of people want to put that question first, and we really have to work and resist that to get people to talk about what kind of schools we want for Oregon first and foremost, and what kind of accountability we need in the system, and then how are we going to pay for it? And it's been a challenge for us.
Do you have, or do you think you will be including in your report anything that will be setting forward, as we often hear, very much in the rhetoric that surrounds this whole education discussion, what specifically is channeled into the classroom? Because as you were talking about, the various components of what goes here, what goes here, what goes here. Will you be able to develop that scenario of how, what funds or what pieces of the puzzle are specifically classroom funding?
Yeah, I think actually we've tried to do that in the guide, and if you haven't seen it, the section on budget accountability is what I would point you to, because that's where we've really tried to show what we believe goes into the classroom today and what today looks like. And it's generating all kinds of feedback. Some people like it, some people don't. As Adam said, most people are saying we want to compare this to something. We compare this to the national figures, doesn't mean so much. Can we look at Washington? Can we look at Idaho? Can we get a snapshot of where Oregon stands? I think we've tried to take a shot at that here. Everything's on the table for our final package. And again, we're sort of sifting through where we're finding common ground, and we will identify those areas for you. We're also sifting through where there isn't common ground and where we think it's going to take leadership and education and information to move issues forward. And so I think you'll see a mix of that from us.
Is that type of information available at the national and or other states surrounding us?
Mm-hmm. It is.
So that there is some comparative.
Yes.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have the booklet with me. Arnie has it. Representative Roblin might allow me to look at it. But I was just curious, when people say that they want money directed to the classroom, do they define what they believe the classroom encompasses? What is the classroom? What are we paying for? Is that in the report? Or in the survey, I should say.
Well, it's an interesting issue you bring up. It's when we meet with people in focus groups and we kind of explore this issue, people have different views as to what the classroom is. They have, just like they have different views as to what the school district. They just are not necessarily all on the same page as to what each of these expenditure items represent. That's what just frustrates them about the way the information is currently reported. It's not clear what that information is addressing, Representative Farr. So what Oregonians are telling us is that they want to see as much money as possible that goes into these school budgets go to the children, go to the classroom.
Yeah.
And when you press them on what you mean by classroom, they are all over the board, but they are talking about instruction, the basics, teaching, these kinds of things. And of course we all know there are other elements of an educational system, but foremost for Oregonians is instructional programming taking place in the classroom, but also taking place elsewhere in the school, in the greater school community. Athletics, theater, all those mm-hmm. kinds of activities as well.
Representative Robert.
I'm doing this for two. I did have a start.
They're going to hold them up.
Your time frame, Representative Schiff.
I'm glad you asked, because I didn't bring the game card.
So, thank you, Chair. And mine, you mentioned yesterday, actually, that one of the things on that was the surprise by people on the cost for special education.
Yes.
And that has come up. What are you finding in that surprise?
Well, first of all, we were surprised, remember, initially about the mandates and how much of an issue for the average Oregonian mandates are. That, first of all, they were aware of the issue, and they had some feelings, and relatively strong feelings, about mandates. And the question was asked yesterday, well, what specifically concerns them? And honestly, it is the cost of special education. It would be a very small number of people saying in a discussion group that would bring that topic up and feel comfortable enough talking about it. But we're here to tell you that everyone else at the table would start listening and have questions and all of a sudden start doing the math and wondering, what is the impact really of these mandates, the requirements of funding special education on the rest of the budget, and how does that affect the delivery of instructional programming to all the other students? And again, it's partly an issue of public education and public information, but we were surprised at the number of people that are feeling pretty strongly about that issue. And I think this discussion guide does a good job pointing out that the impact of these mandates on the education funding system right now.
And I might add, Madam Chair, just the small amount of federal resources that come in to support that. That's been a shocker for people, too.
Well, it's my recollection, and it's been a while since I looked at the book, obviously, but it's the special education piece is far and away the largest cost driver, as I recall.
It's one of two, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Personnel costs and special ed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Representative Lynn.
Thank you. I don't know whether we discussed this issue or not, maybe did so, but I want to bring it back again. And in your report here, Oregon has one of the highest student absenteeism rate in the country. And then concerning the funding school based on attendance rather than the enrollment. Can you expand a little bit about this?
Right. That we put that out last week as an example of Chalkboard's work. We identified the absenteeism problem early on in our process, and what that is that Oregon school officials rate the problem as more significant here than their peers do in other states. That concerned us. So we then looked at why that might be, and there are lots of reasons. First of all, we don't count attendance in a standard way across every school district. That would be the first thing we would need to do. But then we wanted to look at, you know, those states that do fund based on attendance versus enrollment, do they have better retention rates? Does it work to have the school as a full partner in trying to make sure that absenteeism is as minimal as possible? And it looks like it may. We put it in the category of a promising practice. It's not a proven practice. It's not a gold standard, but it's something that appears to be working in some other states, so we think it's worth looking at here. We know there are complex reasons why kids are not in class, from the meth issue to alcohol use. There are lots of reasons, and this isn't going to fix that, but it could bring the schools fully in as a partner to trying to solve some of the absenteeism issues we do see.
Good point.
And add hunting season to that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Representative Tom.
One of the things that you shared with us, with those of us that came to lunch with the other day, was a best practices. What are you doing to research best practice and to identify and define them? And where will that take us?
We did two things there. We started with practitioners in Oregon. We asked teachers and principals and parents and school board members, superintendents, through focus groups to tell us what they thought best practices were, what they'd really seen work. We took that information and we gave it to our research team, which is Echo Northwest and the University of Oregon, David Connolly's folks, and we commissioned a series of reports from them. We asked them to look within Oregon, nationally and internationally, for best practices in three areas: quality improvements, accountability, and finance. And all of those reports are posted now. They are really a starting point, and we're very pleased with them because they provided the initiatives that are being tested here. But as you can imagine, that is just a starting point. I mean, what we found, and I think Representative Bellamy may have told you this when we met, is the universe of best practices defined by a research base that really shows an improvement at the end of the process is very small. And we didn't know that when we started out. We suspected we'd have a list of 20 things that were proven to impact student achievement. We had less than a dozen. We had to go back and open up our sieve a little bit and say, okay, well, show us the promising practices and show us innovations. Show us those really interesting ideas that we don't yet know if they're going to work. And you'll find that in our research, that's actually how it's laid out. And so it's one look at it. I will tell you that we had hoped originally we didn't need to commission the work, and we looked around and we couldn't find it. Now the Education Commission of the States is going to put it on their website as an example of the kind of best practice review that other states can use. I think it's applicable in other states or may want to do on their own. I think we're just starting to add the right tools to the process, if you will, but that's how we proceeded.
I want to be sure that I understand. So that when you went searching for best practices, practices that could be identified by best, standing the scrutiny of research and outcome, were less than a dozen?
Pretty stiff program evaluation requirements, and you know, being someone who's been in the trenches of the practical world, I almost fell off my chair when I heard the academicians tell us that, and I said, "You guys have got to be kidding!" But when they hold it to the rigors of valid program evaluation, and you know, the pre-test, post-test, the ongoing evaluation techniques, adequate sample sizes, as truly statistically significant differences. What we were told, and I've seen it in some other arenas as well, they're very few. They get started, they lose the funding. I mean, there are all sorts of reasons why this stuff, and then there are efforts underway that aren't finished. But about a dozen is what we were told by a darn good research team. But again, that was the orientation. So that's, I think, why we went back and said, okay, time out here. Let's lower the threshold here a little bit. There's something cooking maybe over here in Marshfield High School, or something going on in Coos Bay that teachers are telling us are working, are making a difference. So darn it, let's go down there and see what's going on. We may not have any fancy program evaluation, pre- and post-test and all that to tell us that it's really working, but we have teachers telling us that it's working, we have principals telling us that it's working, we have school board members telling us it's working, so something's happening. So that's what we've been dealing with as an organization.
That's astounding.
But a fair representation, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Additional questions?
I just want to see what Chip would do.
Well, then, you will be having a final report or an end report in May. It'll be first part of May.
End of May. End of May, early June.
Mm-hmm. Well, given the unforeseen chance that we might still be here, we will certainly look forward to having you back for that presentation as well.
Thank you.
Representative
Wilder. I have to do one more question, just on the best practices thing. Okay. You didn't do a specific best practices on reading instruction that works.
I mean, yes, we did. Program.
You did it in reading as well.
Yeah.
Right? That's
yeah.
What I want to make.
Right.
So in any of those math programs or any of the touted ones that come from clinics for any of those kinds of programs, you could only find a dozen or so.
We focused really just on reading, what you said.
Okay. Just reading.
Yeah, just reading. Right.
So it wasn't all the other kinds of
no.
Just reading.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank
for
you.
Coming down yet again.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Thank you.
That's great.
Don't stand in front of the
Well, knowing that there's no other business to come before the committee, we will stand adjourned. Gentlemen, we're...